Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the show that is dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, the Secret Societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. This show, the Guardians of the Holy Grail, was created by me to assist in clearing up many of the popular misconceptions that have been perpetrated in the mainstream media regarding the Secret Societies, Holy Grail Mysteries, the bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and the Knights Templar. Through the show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Initiatic Societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. You can learn about our Gnostic Temple organization and sign our mailing list so that you can receive our monthly e-news by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. While you're there, you can also sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course and become an associate member. You can even download an application to become a full member if you're drawn to do so. There are many books and videos and so forth to see and to order on the website. One of the new books is my newest book called World Gnosis, The Coming Gnostic Civilization, which chronologues the movement to found a one-world civilization way back to its very beginning in the ancient land of Lemuria. And it chronologues that movement from Lemuria west through the Sufis, the Knight Templars, and into Europe with the secret societies. The second part of the book describes the new Gnostic civilization that we are moving into and what it'll look like and the new spirituality that will likely be a part of it. You can purchase a copy of the book in our web store, and our website, once again, is www.gnostictemplar.org. Now, during today's program, if you have any questions for our guests, feel free to call our toll-free number, which is 866-472-5795. Now, before we start today's show, I would also like to mention that I will be leading a tour, actually more of a pilgrimage, you might say, in June to Peru. It's called The Mystical Journey to Machu Picchu and Lake Titicaca, and this will be in June 13th through the 23rd. And I've been down to Peru and led tours there, and I've been there about 17 times now. And my goal is to take you to those places which I found to be the most energizing and the most eye-opening, you might say. It's said that Peru was colonized by a civilization of great masters from Lemuria and also from Atlantis, and they built these towering megalithic temples that you find there today, and they're made out of blocks that are literally 100 tons in weight. And no modern engineer that I know of has been able to figure out how they were able to do it. And so we'll go down there and we will go into those temples and do a lot of ceremony in order to awaken and transform. You see, the Peru is and has been the focal point of the goddess energies and the goddess wisdom and the goddess tradition for some time now. And one reason we take people down there is to totally open up to her and her tradition. Now, those ancient missionaries that came from Lemuria to the Andes in ancient time did come from the primeval goddess tradition of Lemuria and brought her teachings there. So if you would like to know more and you'd like to actually look at an itinerary, it's exactly where we're going, you might or you could visit this website, which is sacredsitesjourneys.com, www.sacredsitesjourneys.com, and click on dates and departures and then click on Peru, and then a itinerary will come up. We're going to so many of the most ancient and mystical sites, including Machu Picchu and also Lake Titicaca, which many people believe to be the most powerful female vortex on the whole entire planet. And we're going to be going out on the lake in order to assimilate a lot of those really high-powered psychic energies. And there's going to be a lot of shamanic ceremony along the way because part of what we're doing is we are preparing ourselves for this big event, this major change of cycles that will be occurring in 2012. And now is the time to prepare for this very, very special time. So once again, if you're interested in this journey, and it will be limited, the number will be limited, so you might want to register right away if you are interested. Please go to this website, www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. Now, today we're going to be speaking about one of my favorite topics, which are the Yazidis. The Yazidis are really a very maligned people who live primarily in Iraq, although there are scattered communities of Yazidis in different countries around the world. The Yazidis are people that have been under attack by fanatical the Muslims believe that the Yazidis' principal deity, known as Tausi Malek, or the Peacock Angel, is Satan, and so they feel justified, basically, in destroying the Yazidi culture and murdering the Yazidi people. Of course, Tausi Malek is anything but the peacock, anything but the Satan, but many fanatical Muslims have been brainwashed into believing that it is. Over the years, millions of Yazidis have been murdered, and more are being murdered every day. The Yazidi situation has become particularly dire in the last 10 years. You may have heard of the attack on the Yazidis in August of 2007 when four trucks laden with bombs and driven by Muslim suicide bombers were driven into the Yazidi town of Sinjar and then detonated. And they managed to kill about 500 Yazidis and they injured countless more. Things have continued to deteriorate amongst the Yazidis since that time, and now many Yazidis fear about even leaving their homes or going to work or traveling to the next town to visit their relatives. The Iraqi officials, most of whom are Muslims, often neglect to give the Yazidis their portion of international relief food and water. And since the Yazidis have not been allowed proper representation in the Iraqi parliament, they are now really powerless to change their situation through political and legal channels. Now, I first became aware of the Yazidis many years ago when I was researching my first book, The Return of the Serpents of Wisdom, but I didn't really do a serious research on them until some years later when I had an experience in the Andes that really literally changed my life. During a shamanic experience, I slipped into, another dimension. And all of a sudden, I found myself surrounded by thousands of eyes. At first, I thought the eyes were human. But then as I looked closer, I realized they were eyes that one sees on peacock feathers. And then on closer examination, I found that these eyes were indeed on peacock feathers, and the feathers themselves came together as many peacocks. As I looked around, everything had the shape of the peacock, it seemed like. Even the mountains were gigantic peacocks. I was pretty dumbfounded, to say the least, and actually it was not until a few years later when I learned when I heard about a Yazidi creation myth that I knew one I had seen during that Andean experience. According to the Yazidi, millions of years ago, when the earth was still fiery and rocking with earthquakes and volcanoes, God sent the greatest of the angels to earth to make the planet green and give it color. Now, as this angel descended to earth, it took the form of a resplendent peacock that possessed all the seven colors. It landed on earth at a place which today is known as Lalish, which is a temple village in northern Iraq, recognized by the Yazidis to be their most holy shrine. Now, after it landed, the peacock angel spread its wings and then proceeded to cover the earth with its peacock colors and plumes. What I had seen in the Andes was these plumes, and although they are in a dimension just really 1 degree higher than our own, I've since discovered that the peacock plumes can be seen in the third dimension by simply tweaking one's visual perception just a bit. Now, I've seen the plumes of the peacock angel many times since that Andean experience, and he has shown me things about himself at these times. Once he revealed that his form is also the flower of life, and another of his forms is the dragon, the blue-green dragon that is known about by many cultures around the world and is known as, and is called the Creator. Apparently, if you tweak the peacock form just a little bit, it actually turns into a blue-green dragon. And as I said, this is the form that sages of other cultures see the peacock angel, and they claim that the earth is the physical body of the primal dragon, similar to how the Yazidis feel about Taussi Malek. The peacock angel has also informed me that the mysteries of the peacock angel are the most ancient on the planet and the essence of all those that came later. These are the primal mysteries of alchemy and gnosis. Over the years, I've studied with Koala San, a Yazidi leader in Lincoln, Nebraska, which is the largest Yazidi settlement in the U.S. He's told me that the Yazidis were the first people on Earth and created by the peacock angel to be his special people. Now, as a lover of the peacock angel and a member of many dragon orders and lineages, I feel very deeply connected to the Yazidi people and have pledged to assist them in any way that I can. Besides feeling that they are my brothers and sisters, I also know that unless these people are helped by or helped, humanity could lose one of its most important links to its past. I believe the Yazidis hold a key to some of humanity's most ancient of secrets. I do not feel that I have been able to do much to help the Yazidis over the years, but I was able to create a website for them so that the truth of who they are and who and what the peacock angel really is can be known by the public. That website is www.yaziditruth.org. I've also written a book about the Yazidis called The Truth Behind the Christ Myth, The Redemption of the Peacock Angel, and you can find that on our website, www.GnosticTemplars.org. Now, one of the Yazidis I've met since creating that website is my guest today, Mirza Ismail. Mirza is a Yazidi leader from London, Ontario, who's been doing a lot of work to alert the world to the plight of the Yazidis and assist the Yazidi people in Iraq in gaining the rights and privileges they deserve. Mirza is co-founder of the Yazidi Community Center in London, and he is the founder of the Yazidi Human Rights Organization International. You can learn about this organization by visiting its website, which is www.yazidihumanrights.org. Mirza was on the show last year, so it's very nice to have him back again. So greetings, Mirza. Welcome back to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Thank you very much to you and to your staff for having me on your show. It's great to see you again.
Thank you for coming on. I want to ask you a couple questions about yourself and your community in London. First of all, how long have you been in London, and when did you leave Iraq?
I left Iraq during the Gulf War in 1991, when I was only about 17 years old. I used to live in refugee camp in Syria, and then I moved to Turkey. Same thing, I used to live in refugee camp for about 2 years, and in 1993, I came to Canada.
Are most of, then I imagine most of the people in your community are also refugees. Did they also arrive about the same time as you?
No, they didn't. They stayed in Syria, and as you know, the situation in Syria was very, very different than the situation in Turkey. They came here around like 2099, so they have been here about 10, 11 years now, most of them. So in Turkey, the situation was different between the government of Turkey and the PKK. So the government of Turkey put pressure on UN to move their refugees. So we came out early.
Well, how big is your community, and how have the Yazidis in your community adjusted to Western life?
Well, for the Yazidis, it's easy. We are okay, and we get along with everybody, as long as human being exists. So there's no problem for us to get along, to be friends with anybody. So it was easy for us to adapt the culture faster than most of the other nations. And especially the Yazidis and Christians have a long time friendship in Middle East, and we have suffered the same struggle and same problem in the past. So it was okay for us.
Do you think the Yazidis, do you think the Canadians understand the Yazidis, what you're all about, and who and what the Peacock Angel is?
There are many I have friends, many Canadian friends. They are very interested in, and then they study. We visit each other, kind of for a cup of coffee or tea, and some of them they do not know, and some of them they do know. Especially since the internet became a powerful tool to find information. So,
right? Do you try to explain to the Canadians what your tradition is about, and what the Peacock Angel is about?
Yes, we have, and same thing as you talked earlier about it. So many of them, they think, because we believe most of the Western study came from Islam, and so they learned the wrong thing about the Yazidis. So now people, I think, are getting better for understanding the truth about the Yazidis.
That's good. Your people, your Yazidi people in your community in London, how do they normally do their worship of Tausi Malek?
Well, we are a very small community. We don't have that support to build a temple. But as Yazidi, we can pray anywhere and everywhere. We believe God is everywhere. So we do prayer at home. But on special days, we gather in one home, and we spend our time there praying. And yeah.
Are you trying then to get the funds so that you can acquire a temple where you can worship?
I don't think at the time, because we are a very, as I said, we are a very tiny community, and most of them are new and. Their family, and it's hard to support themselves and their family and their children at the same time. So it may take longer time for us to be able to get some funds. We have not tried, but we have talked about it, and we say probably this no time yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, from what I understand, it was when Tausi Malek created the Yazidi people. At that time, he gave them instructions on how to worship him. So were those instructions passed down through the years, and do you follow those instructions today?
Yes, we do. And when we say Tau Simalek is not just for the Yezdi people. It's for the whole universe. And we believe, like, first time God created seven angels, archangels, from his precious light, and Tau Simalek is one of them. So what all the, like, the teaching of Tau Simalek, just praising God and praying God for peace, for happiness, for better health, for the peace in the world and in the universe.
Are there special prayers or special mantras?
We pray five times a day. And we face the sun. We believe the sun is one of the closest natural power to God and the light of God. So we, in the morning we face the sun, and in the evening we face the sun. And when we sleep, we say, like, the sleeping prayer and the midday prayer. So all the prayers about asking God and asking the angels for a better and peaceful life for the Yezdis and for all the people, for all the good human beings.
Well, that's good. That's good to know, and I'm sure that'll be encouraging to other people to hear that Tau Simalek is not just for the Yezidis, but it's for everybody. It's for the whole world.
As we say, like, God created seven angels from his light, and because every day, like, we believe Tau Simalek was created on Sunday, which Sunday in our own, like, word. Means like first day, and then second day, third day, until the 7 days were completed. So we believe there are 7 days, and there are seven angels, archangels.
Do you and other people in your community do you feel the influence of Tau Simalek in your life?
Yes, we do, and because what we this is like we have. Three words we should follow, and then if we follow, we believe Tau Simalek is going to give us, like, happiness and peace. So one of the words is a good word, like what you say to people, and good thought, and good deed. So these three words are very important in the years these people. If we follow these three words, we're not gonna make wrongdoing, and this is the true. And then these three words, like, from one generation passed to another generation and to another generation. So, for example, if I work for you, or I work for my family, or I work for somebody I never know, we do the same good work as much as we can. And we say that good word, not to have, like, conflict with others. So being polite and nice to each other is another peaceful, we can live in more peaceful world.
Do you or other Yezidis you know and here and in Iraq, do they often question why Tau Simalek hasn't done more to help the Yezidi people now when they need it so badly?
We do need it, but it's not time yet. When the time comes, because we have signs, when the time comes, it's going to come and then it's going to help us.
Is there a prophecy about him coming or returning to Earth at a time when he can help you?
Yes, we do.
What is the prophecy?
We believe that Tau Simalek himself is not going to come to help us, but he's gonna send a spirit in the name of Malek Sharfadin. Malek Sharfadin is one of the archangels as well, and his temple is in Sinjar Mountain. So it's not time yet. So when the time comes, but the signs we see now, we are getting close. Hopefully, it may be in our generation, because now we are in the testing. So if we pass the test, those people are going to have a very peaceful and happy life.
Well, so Tulsi Monaki is sending an actual person to come help you?
He's going to send like an actual person in the spirit of Malik Sharfuddin, and Malik Sharfuddin is one of the archangels, one of the seven God's angels.
I see. Okay. So maybe around the planet they're talking about this being the time of the new age, the new era. Maybe now is the time that Tulsi Malek will help the Azeri people, huh?
Yes, it's just kind of starting, but at the moment we are on the test, so whether we're going to pass or whether we're going to fail. So for those CSD who pass the test, is going to have a very, very happy, peaceful life. And at the same time, when Malik Sharfuddin comes, also we believe Tulsi Malek is going to send Jesus too. It's not just Malik Sharfuddin. He's going to send Jesus too at the same time. And what we believe, Jesus is going to stay, sit in the kingdom chair in Egypt, and Malik Sharfuddin is going to stay in Sinjar, in the temple where he's on the Sinjar Mountain.
I see. Okay.
And from that time...
So it's happening at the same time as what the Christians call the second coming of Christ, then?
Yes, we believe both is going to come at the same time. And we believe both Tulsi Malek is helping both to come to make a peaceful world.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me ask you this. Obviously that the Yazidis need help very badly in Iraq and have needed help for some time. Do you feel like the international community is doing much to help the Yazidi people in Iraq?
No, not at this time. And when we think about international community, it's very hard to believe international community when they say like equality and equal rights. We don't see that equality and equal rights to the Yazidis, especially mm-hmm. like when United States and United Kingdom invaded Iraq. They say we're going to liberate all Iraqi people. They didn't say we're going to liberate specific people or specific ethnic group. They say all Iraqis, we're going to remove the dictator, and then everybody's going to have a share and responsibility for the country's its government. But unfortunately, that has not applied to the Yazidis, and now the Yazidis lost hope in Iraq, especially. They say America's not doing anything, and in fact, America's helping others to punish us. Because the Yazidis, especially on the daily basis, they're getting killed, they're getting tortured, and the U.S. coalition is there doing nothing.
So, what are you doing through your organization in order to get more help for the Yazidis?
We do send letters to international communities such as. A UN and other human rights organizations around the world, like U.S. Department of Religious Freedom, European Human Rights, but so far we have got no help yet.
Well, in the countries where the Yazidis have settled, like Canada, I believe there's a big community of them in Germany, the leaders of those countries where they've settled, are those leaders helping the Yazidis in Iraq?
Some of them do, and some of them don't.
Are you getting much help from the German government? I know there's a lot of Yazidis in Germany. I think that's the biggest community. And so, are you getting help from the German government or the German authorities?
No, because the problem and the conflict by misunderstanding the Yazidi from the Kurds. That's the big problem we have, and then that's the big problem the Yazidis have in Germany. Because Germany was first country who gave rights for Yazidi to stay in Germany to give a special status as German government. That's long time ago. They sent a mission to Turkey, and they saw the Yazidi situation were kind of very, very hard, very difficult. So when they came back, was kind of a Christian group. So when they came back, they told their government that's what's going on. And in the past, the Yazidis and Assyrian and other Christianity has a very good, peaceful relationship, so we should be able to help them. So the German government allowed that, give a special status to the Yazidis. And after that, whenever the Yazidis people could get into Germany and just they say, like, I am Yazidi, they would give a special status and refugee status, and then they're going to stay and work and build a new life there. But what happened, unfortunately, after that, like when the Kurdish people saw that, they were coming to Germany, and then they were giving the Yazidis name, and then they were considering, they say, we are Yazidi, and then the German government got confused. Who's Yazidi and who are Yazidi and who are not Yazidis, especially the PKK group from Turkey.
Well, I'm sure there are people that maybe they don't hold political office, but there are people like myself in the world that would really like to be able to help the Yazidis in Iraq. Can you tell us, what we can do?
Well, I think there are many things, especially American people, can do to help the Yazidis. But if they want to, one thing, it has been about 3 months, the Yazidis have not received any food ratio, which is kind of called like a food program for oil, whatever, and then used to come like on the monthly basis. Since the war started, sometimes they just get 1 month and then doesn't get for 2 months, and then get 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, and then they cut off that thing. They transfer their food ratio from Mosul to Duhok, and then later on from Duhok to Mosul, and just they playing like a game with us, because we don't have any support from international communities. Mm-hmm. And what we believe, like, there's U.S. aid. We know they have given medical aid, food aid, other humanitarian aid to Iraq, but none of this has reached the Yazidi people, especially in Sinjar region.
So, well, then how can we change that so that we can make sure that the food rations get to the people, get to the Yazidi people?
Well, the international community should go there instead of giving to the Kurdish people, and then Kurdish people is going to give the food ration just to those Kurdified people. There are probably a few thousand people who have accepted the Kurdish Kurdification in Sinjar region. And more than 50% of the Yazidis in Shaykan have accepted the Kurdification. So they give to those people, and then they bring in front of the big screen TV, and they say, yeah, we receive everything we need. But unfortunately, that's not true.
So perhaps we need a United Nations force to go over there to make sure that the food gets to the Yazidi people.
Yes, because it's very important when you are in the scene, when you are in the situation, instead of, like, now if you donate 100 bucks, so you're going to donate. You are just kind of making yourself that you are helping another, like, human being. But your money, where it's going to go, you don't know. You have donated, you're going to say, like, whether it's for Yazidi or whether it's for Kaldo Assyrian. But after the money reaches there, the government is on control of that money, and that's not the right thing.
Instead of that's the big problem, right?
That's a big problem.
So on your website, do you give instructions on how people can donate money to the Yazidis?
Well, yeah, we do have said that. We have said that many times in many letters to the United States, especially, and in to United Nations. We say, like, please, if you send humanitarian aid, somebody from international community, the foreign workers, whether from Canada, U.S., Australia, or Europe, should go with that mission. And instead of giving the Kurdish militia and then they distribute only to the people who are affiliated with either of the party, whether it's PUK, which belongs to Jalal Talabani, the current president of Iraq, or Masoud Barzani, the KDP. And those political parties, when they go there, they say, like, our people should come and then we brought the food. They don't say, like, the food or other humanitarian aid has come from international community. They say, we give it to you. And for those who are not happy with us, they have no right to come or to receive anything.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, if we are able to get the food directly to the Yazidis, still that's just going to be a temporary answer to their problems. I think in the long term, they need more representation in the parliament. Do you think that that's going to happen?
Currently, we don't think it's going to happen because the United States is just keeping silent. UN is keeping silent and European Union is keeping silent towards the Yazidis because the Yazidis are not Christian, not Muslim, not Jewish, so we have no right to probably to exist.
I see.
What we feel. Because if they feel like human beings are equal, I think there should be like a UN office in Sinjar. If there was equal human being, we believe. And that's the fact that the United States could put pressure on Maliki to give a ministerial seat to the Yazidis. And it's more than, at least more than 650 to 700,000 Yazidis there. They got only one quota seat. This is unjust. But what can we do?
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't look like the situation is going to be changing for the Yazidis very soon, especially in Parliament, huh?
We don't think so because, like, one of the lady, like, Kurdified lady, she was offered a ministerial seat, and this is a combined agreement between the KRG, whether it's Jalal Talabani or Masoud Barzani and Maliki not to give Yazidi rights because they believe we are infidel people.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there any peacekeeping force that's protecting the Yazidis in Iraq right now?
No.
Because I think that, and this is something I've been feeling, is that I would myself personally like to go over and document the Yazidis, what's happening with them, what they're going through, what their needs are, make a documentary and then spread it around the world, send it perhaps to the world's leaders. But I think that myself and any other documentary filmmaker it's much too unsafe to go over there to do such a thing, right?
The problem we ourselves, we don't understand because the U.S. Military is everywhere in Iraq and U.S. military is in Sinjar. They see the whole situation, but we don't know why they don't tell the truth to the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big problem. So a survey was conducted about 3 months ago, 4 months ago, of more than 5,000 Yazidis, more than 90% of the answer, they say, the question was, why this is happening to you? Do you feel you have rights to exist? And more than 90% of the answers, they say, we believe United States, United Kingdom, and France supporting the Kurdish terrorists against the Yazidis.
Mm.
Because since 2003 to present, more than 31 Yazidi girls and married women have been abducted by KRG's officer and militia, and nothing has been done. Just last month, a lady from Al Jazeera, where was in 2008 the big explosive bombing took place in one of the village. Her name was Leila. Arar was abducted by a militia officer, and then what the Kurdish militia did, they put most of her clothing soaked with blood and buried it, and they say the lady has been killed. So the family and then the relatives, they say, like, we have to see the body. It's our daughter. And then after digging, was only clothes, nobody, nothing. And then the girl was found in Kharji region and was abducted by a Kurdish officer.
Mm. I know there's these just amazing atrocities that are happening that really nobody in the world knows anything about. And it's really sad. Most people don't even know who the Yazidis are. I don't know anything about them. And that's one reason that it's very hard for your people to get help. So you're recommending that people, if they want to help the Yazidis, they can donate money. Is there anything else they can do? Can they write letters to their congresspeople?
The best thing, if they do work with the, what they call Christian group, if they work with them and send and test the U.S. Administration to give equal rights to all Iraqis, not just a specific group, but to all Iraqis. As you know, like the Kurds and Syrians are the same thing. Like in last October, the terrorists exploded like the Church of Our Lady of Salvation. They killed more than like 50 people. This is a campaign. It's a combined campaign between KRG and the central government supporting the extremists against the non-Muslim communities in Iraq. And this is a very clear sign, but the international community just keeps silent and doing nothing.
Mm.
Not just well, 1 year. From 1.4 million of Kurdish Syrians before the 2003, and more than like 1.1 to 1.2 million Yazidis, only from both sides, probably about 1 million left now in Iraq.
Well, it might do us both good for both our websites if we can add a page that specifically says exactly what people in the world can do to help the Yazidis now if they feel drawn to helping the Yazidis.
And the other thing we know, like on a yearly basis, USAID is sending humanitarian aid and other aids to Iraq. So why this aid is not reaching the Yazidis region?
Mm-hmm.
It's a question. So this is an, like those humanitarian organizations, when they say like we are on a humanitarian mission, so how come like I close my eye and then just throw what I have to get to the wrong hands and those innocent people not receiving.
Right. Well, I think that the only way that people are going to want to help the Yazidis if they understand who the Yazidis are, they know about their amazing history, they know about the Peacock Angels. So I think the best way that we can help these people.
Like us, we are like human beings. There's nothing like different between human beings. I don't, like, whatever your fate is, your fate. God created you. I didn't create you. And God created me. So people should respect God's job, God's work. I wasn't created by myself. We all created by God. So if you respect that, you should respect the human being that created by God. So there's no reason, whatever my belief is, so if I die, God's going to judge me, not people
right.
going to judge me.
Well, I agree totally, but I think one of the problems is, Mirza, is that I think one of the problems is people just don't know enough about the Yazidis to really care what's happening to them, because they'll say, well, of course, Yazidis having problems, but there are problems all over the world, and so they're going to find some other people that they understand better and try to help them. You know.
Yeah, because there are problems different than the other problem. There are like priority problems, and there are just kind of normal, is it okay to take time to fix the problem? There are different between the urgent problem and the normal problem. So the urgent problem now, United States, especially like the European Union, they know that the Kurdish Syrian and the Yazidi are just fleeing Iraq, right? So they know these people are having a big problem. But why is it so hard for them to understand that? Like on a daily basis, people, especially the Yazidis and Kurdish Syrian, when they have like whatever the property they have, they're going to sell it just as long as they can get to a European or to any other Western country. So there's a big problem. Like the civilization started in Middle East, which is kind of from the Sumerian period to Babylon to the Assyria. Those history, the civilization history, was belong to Yazidis and Assyrian, which goes back to more than 6,760 years now. And the world knows that. But the historian knows that. But when it comes to the killing, they say, there's problem all over the Iraq. The Yazidis and Assyrian, when the problem is between Kurds and Arab or Sunni or Shi'i, they fight to get power. The Yazidis and innocent Christian, Kurdish Syrian, they know they don't need, they don't asking to be a president of Iraq. They want to live in peace and freedom and have their right. It's as simple as that. They don't asking for any other thing. Just they asking for their right.
Right. Well, again, I would say, Mirza, I think one of the main problems is that not enough people know about the Yazidis. They don't know who they are. Most people haven't even ever heard the name Yazidi. I think the best way we can help these people, the Yazidi people, is by telling people in the world, telling them about the Yazidis and what's happening with these people, telling them about their amazing histories and what they've been through and how they were the first people. And this is what I try to do
if we could get like support, a TV station would be the best.
Mm-hmm.
If we had support, the TV station would be the best, because there's no TV station. The Yazidis, especially in Sinjar, they cut out of mainstream media. It's only a radio belongs to KRG, and then another radio, same thing, belongs to KRG. One is from Barzani's Skontra, and then the other is from Jalal Talabani. So they don't say anything. So if they have a TV station, so you would know what's going there. You would see the picture. Sometimes when we say, like, a picture worth 1,000 words. So when you don't see the situation, it's going to be very hard to believe it. Doesn't matter, like, how much you write or I write or any other people write. It's not going to have an effect on people to support them. But the main thing, a TV station would be the best for the world to understand the truth about the Yazidi and about their situation, what's going on there.
Well, if that was possible, if that was a possibility to acquire a TV station for the Yazidis, where would it go, and who would run the TV station?
We would have people. We would have people to run it. Like, for example, like, Atlas probably is more than 50 TV stations in the United States now, right? If they could give, like, 2 hours a TV station to the Yazidis people with a camera, and then would be, like, enough to record the daily incidents, the daily news about the Yazidis, and then people could see it, what's going on there.
Yeah, okay. So if you could get enough funding together to help the Yazidis, that's specifically what you would do with the funding, is you would try to create a TV station
and a humanitarian aid, and also we would ask the UN to build a UN office in Sinjar.
Okay.
In 2009, Human Rights Watch went to Erbil. We talked on the phone more than like 4 or 5 times. The KRG told them, if you go to Sinjar, they told Human Rights Watch organization, if you go to Sinjar, Sinjar is full of terrorism, you're not going to come back alive. So if Sinjar region is that dangerous, what are the Kurdish militia doing there? Kurdish militia haven't been killed. The people who have been killed, the Yezid, the innocent Yezidi are being killed.
Well, I certainly hope that it becomes safer to travel in the Yezidi territory in northern Iraq, so that people like myself can go over, study with the Yezidis, and make a documentary to show the world what is happening to the Yezidi people.
Yeah, I just had a person from TV station from UK. Traveled to northern Iraq, and we had communication several times, and I give the whole the region, I give the information that I'm going to go and then make a documentary, and then after he arrived in northern Iraq, in Erbil, they convinced him that if he goes to Sinjar, he's going to be killed, and he called me, and he says, like, I'm sorry, I cannot go there, and I cannot do anything for the Yezidis, because they say it's full of terrorism, that region.
As long as
the Qaeda has influence on international community, the innocent Yezidi is going to get killed, going to get tortured, going to flee, and nobody knows about the real enemy who is doing that, the real attackers.
Have you been back to Iraq yourself since you left?
Yes, I have been many times, and the last time was in 2007. In 2007, I was in January. Like in October, I was there until January of 2007. And on my way back to Canada, on the border, a U.S. convoy stopped me, and they told me, you have a fake passport. You smuggle people from Iraq to other countries. And there was a lady from KRG with the convoy, about 7-8 U.S. Mission was there, like from the military. I say, what's this? This is my Canadian passport. This is my Canadian citizenship. This is my ID. And also, I am a member of the United Nations Association in Canada. What are you saying? They say, why don't you accept Kurdification? I say, because I'm not Kurdish. I don't want to accept. God created me Yezidi. Not Kurdish people created me so I can be Kurdish. And then they kept me away for more than 3 hours, 4 hours, until I was able to pass the border. Because those ones, we don't know what's going on, what's wrong. The U.S. military, the U.S. administration are very convinced by the KRG officials. There's something wrong going on, but we don't know what's that.
Because if
you are a superpower, I think you should be able to go to see the real situation, what's going on.
Right. Did you find it very unsafe to travel when you were in Iraq?
For me, it was unsafe because the officers from KRG, they give me death threat. They say, because you're asking for the rights for the Yezidi to exist, and you're not going to be able to survive. The Yezidis have to be Kurdish. Whether you want it or you don't want it, they have to be Kurdish. That's a big problem we have. And also, I want to talk about the Yezidis girl who was killed in April 7, about from Bashika, Dua Khalid. I want to, because that incident has sent a very bad Yezidis image around the world by stoning the lady. But who were behind that attack? Who were behind that plan? Yeah. When that happened, because of the Yezidis and the local Arab in Mosul, especially the Shamir clan, they had a very good relationship. It has been like at least since the last 100 years, no problem, nothing. What happened? Because as you know, and most of the world know, that the KRG is expanding their geographical region. They say this is the only way. They give a very large amount of money to some of the Yezidis who accepted the Kurdification, and Prince Tahsin was one of them, and they accepted that plan. So they say, if we kill the lady, and then they're gonna Arabs gonna hate you, and then gonna the conflict gonna start back again, and then there's gonna be no way they're gonna be able to go, but they're gonna accept Kurdification and be a part of the KRG region. So they did that plan. The perpetrator behind that plan was Khosrow Goran, the former governor deputy, and same thing that call it Suleyman Sevo, the religious clergy who accepted Kurdification, and Junior Mullah Barzani and Prince Tahsin. Those four people were behind that plan, and we hope, and we, in the name of humanity and human rights, we ask international community, we ask U.S. Department of Justice, we ask U.N. Department of Justice, we ask European Union Department of Justice, and we ask Russian Department of Justice to bring those criminals to the court of justice and be punished for their committed crimes against humanity and human rights.
Well, it sounds like you're doing some excellent work, and I'd like to say the name of your website so people can visit there.
Okay, and also I want to make I want to clarify about the attack, the August 14 attack in two Yazidi villages. This is very important for the world to understand. I know most of the government understand what was going on, but none of the innocent people, probably 1% of the innocent people, especially the Western, the good, passionate people, don't understand what happened, and just they believe what the media show, and the media didn't show even 1% of the truth what was happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you and I and those of us that care for these Eddies will just have to keep doing the best we can and asking Tausi Malek to inspire us and to light our path so that we can help these Eddie people. And Mirza's website address again, and you should all visit his website, take a look at what he's doing, is www.yazidihumanrights.org. You just run it together. It's one word, yazidihumanrights.org. And you can also visit the website I set up, which is www.yazidi-truth.org. And, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Mirza. You explained what's happening with the Yazidis and told us some things about Tausi Malek, and so we're just we're crossing our fingers that some positive things are going to start happening, and for some time I've been wanting to help the Yazidis, but I need funding like you do, and hopefully some funding will come through and then I will be able to help. So I hope everybody that listens to this interview is going to want to do something to help these very, very important people. If we lose the Yazidis, we have lost a major, major link to the past of humanity, and we've lost a lot of our history. So again, thank you so much, Mirza, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you very much, Mark, for having me, and I would like to thank your staff, and I thank the listeners, and I hope they be able and make at least a movement to save innocent Yazidian, Kildor, Syrian, and Sabian in Iraq. And thank you very much for your help and support to the Yazidis, and thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, Mirza. I'm sure we'll have you on back on again at some point. So thanks again. So that's our show for today, and we'll be back again in a couple weeks with another show. And so in the meantime, remember that the Holy Grail is always right inside your own heart, and go there and find it. So, bye for now.